This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Just about every actor wants to get a shot at playing Hamlet. My guest Stephen Lang gets his chance on Broadway beginning next week with Elizabeth McGovern as Ophelia. A theatrical rite of passage for many younger actors is playing one of Willie Loman's sons in Death of a Salesman. Lang got that chance in the Dustin Hoffman Broadway revival, which was also adapted for TV. Lang recently starred in the film adaptation of the novel Last Exit to Brooklyn and the made-for-TV movie Babe Ruth. You can see Lang Sunday, March 15th on CBS in a movie based on the story of Nancy Ziegenmeier, an Iowa woman who was raped and decided to prosecute even though the rapist swore he would kill her children if she went to the police. The editor of the Des Moines Register wrote a story about the rape, the trial, and how they changed Ziegenmeier's life. The movie stars Patricia Wedig as Ziegenmeier and Stephen Lang as her husband. This scene takes place after the newspaper story is published, and Ziegenmeier is preparing to go on the Phil Donahue show. Her husband, who has been withdrawn but supportive, now resents the media attention.
It's like dancing on the table. It's just like that.
You are the one that told me that I should go to the newspaper, that I was strong, that I could help other people.
That's right. And then when the articles came out and when the trial was over, we were gonna see if we could get this straightened out between us. You said, you hang in there, Stephen. So I did, I hung in. But something else has come up, I guess. This damn TV thing. Nancy, you don't want me. You want a national audience.
You're just mad because I'm taking control of my life and you can't stand it.
Well, then you just tell me what I'm supposed to do. Do I just wave hi when you're on the tube and the kids are pulling each other's hair out? I think your priorities stink. And since I'm not one of them, I don't intend to burden you with my presence any more than is necessary. Hey, I've had it with you. Don't you expect me to be here when you come back? Here. That came from Detective Roth yesterday. Your limo is here.
What did you think about this character when you took the role?
I thought it was he was very locked up. I thought he was very loyal. I thought he was like a lot of American men. That he was probably very, very dedicated to the notion of family and very much in love with his wife and his children and his life, and really not someone who in the normal course of events would ever express it.
Is it difficult as an actor to get that inexpressiveness and to express it? Because you have to express the inexpressiveness.
I think you just have to have faith in the material and trust in yourself that it will it'll come across, and hopefully some good movie music will help a lot too.
I think this is the most inhibited character I've seen you play.
Yeah, I think so. That's one of the reasons I was very pleased to be asked to do it, because usually, or over the past few years, everything that's come my way has been very intense and been people who are kind of out there. And this guy isn't. This guy is a very mainstream American man. And so it was a whole facet of myself that's actually quite close to who I am. And I was pleased to be able to do it.
Next week, you become Hamlet on Broadway. What are you doing to get into Hamlet? And I ask that knowing how many Hamlets you must have seen in your life and how many Hamlets people in the audience probably will have seen, too. And I think that's one of the many things that makes it such a difficult role.
Well, I think that the role, as written by Shakespeare, is difficult enough without putting on yourself any of the added burdens of trying to either be different from other Hamlets you've seen or to be greater than any other Hamlets you've seen. For the last couple of years, I've pretty much stayed away from seeing Hamlet, although I did see the Zeffirelli film. Knowing that the time was approaching when I was going to play it, I really didn't want to see a lot of the work. And I've been involved in other Hamlets over the years. I've done four other productions not playing Hamlet. And I've seen, as you say, probably a good dozen and probably more Hamlets. And each one I've taken something from, although I'd probably be hard put to say exactly what it was, but I just think it's all kind of grist for the mill. It all somehow gets inside you and mulches over a period of years, and you know, enters into your into my own process in some way. But what comes out hopefully is totally and uniquely my own.
Why is Hamlet considered the ultimate role for an actor?
I think it's the most mysterious role ever written. I think it's that simple. It's intellectually, spiritually, artistically, and emotionally and physically the most challenging role ever written, or at least the most that I've ever read in the theater. And I just think that it is delving very, very deeply into the mystery of life and death. And it's basically an unsolvable. There's so much ambiguity in the role. There's so much leeway for an actor. You can never say that this Hamlet is right and this Hamlet is wrong. And so it's subject to an infinite number of interpretations. And I think that's why it's so great. Aside from just the sheer beauty of the language, which is extraordinary. It's to me to be able to work on this, to go from scene to scene is it's a great, great, responsibility and an honor.
I had a great high school teacher who loved Hamlet more than any other work of literature, and she read the whole thing out loud to us, mm-hmm. then took us to the Joseph Papp production of Hamlet, which was considered to be very radical in the 1960s.
Oh, Marty Sheen, the Martin Sheen production, I think.
I don't remember him in it, but who knew who Martin Sheen was back in 1967 anyway, so I don't know. But anyway, this teacher really brought Hamlet to life for me, and I was wondering when you became really involved with it. When was it through going to the theater or through reading it? How old were you?
Hmm. I became involved with Shakespeare from a fairly early age and I remember the first play I remember being involved in was The Tempest. And I think it probably came via a Hallmark Hall of Fame that was done.
Right.
Yeah, and all I remember was that Roddy McDowall played Ariel, I think, and he was sort of gilded. And I looked at it, it was amazing and interesting, and all these monsters and sprites running around. And then I remember reading the play with my father when I was 8 or 9, I guess, and understanding it. And then I looked at one of the Charles Lamb books of Shakespeare, and the names are what intrigued me back then. Sir Toby Belch, things like that. I just found very amusing. I was, attracted to a lot of the rougher and more bawdy characters in Shakespeare. Nick Bottom, one of my favorite characters. My first memory of Hamlet actually is from, I remember, a magazine called Cracked, which is sort of a, like Mad magazine, did a parody of Hamlet. And I read it, and I thought it was very, very funny. And then when I first began to actually work on Hamlet was in 1973, I think. I did... when I was in college, I did my senior thesis on Hamlet. And so I've been working on it periodically ever since then, I guess.
If you're just joining us, my guest is actor Stephen Lang, and he's about to do Hamlet on Broadway. The previews start next week. I have to ask you about your recent performance in the film adaptation of Hubert Selby's Last Exit to Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And you were a longshoreman who ends up in a relationship... not exactly unrequited, but semi-requited relationship with a drag queen. Yeah. And you undergo quite a bit of punishment at the end of the movie after kind of sexually coming on to a boy. All the guys and the boy afterwards runs into a bar and all the young guys come out and beat you up really badly and kind of crucify you.
Yeah.
At the end. I'm wondering what it was like to do that scene, how much punishment you actually had to take.
That was a tough night. The guys who were doing the beating are all very, very physically fit, very active young guys, and I caught a couple of kicks in the ribs and the chest that night. And of course, you know, being into playing self-hating Harry Black, I was kind of, you know, perversely enjoying myself as long as I didn't get hurt too badly. And I got knocked down once and my back of my head, you know, hit the ground, and there was a big old rock in the ground, and I cracked my head on that. So all in all, it kind of contributed to the pain of the evening. It was real, but not as real as it looked, because the final scene is kind of horrifying. And when they crucified me, I was hanging up there for a while. And I remember a friend of mine, Ron Perlman, who was the Beast on Beauty and the Beast, came out to the shoot that night. And he previously had done a film for this producer, Bernd Eichinger, The Name of the Rose, in which he played a demented hunchback who was crucified. So it struck us as kind of interesting that all of the actors that Bernd Eichinger crucified were on the set that night. And as I, after a take, I came down and I was, you know, bleeding profusely and really, really was beaten up. And Ron came over and looked at me and said, "You're having a lot of fun, aren't you?" And I kind of winked at him and said, "You bet." Yeah, I mean, it's what every actor wants to do.
You were bleeding profuse amounts of stage blood, weren't you?
Yes, I believe so. I probably had a little bit of my own in there, but yeah, it was stage blood.
As you're hanging up there, crucified, You open up your mouth, and, you know, I expected you to say something like, "Help me," or "God help me," or "Oh God," or something, and instead you just kind of open up your mouth, and just a kind of agonized yelp comes out, you know? Tell me about working on that scene, working on what you were going to do vocally on that.
I don't know what that is other than just final dog's kind of screech of anguish. I don't know. In the book, you know, it ends, what he yells out, which is, you know, well, not unprintable because they printed it, but they decided it was too raw for the film. And so I just tried to, I think, articulate this obscene religious thought without saying anything. Basically, it's his feelings about the whole universe. You know, the thing with this character is he's never experienced a moment of happiness in his life. And when he does experience happiness after getting over the initial shock of it, because being something alien to him, it scares the hell out of him and he doesn't know how to respond to it. But when he begins to luxuriate in it for the first time in his life, he's beaten blind for it. He's crucified for it. And so the last thing you see of this character is really the setting in stone of a despairing man, of a cynic, you know, of a broken body. So that's what that scream was supposed to articulate. I don't know what it came out as.
Well, I think it did pretty good, good. Yeah. My guest is actor Stephen Lang, and next week he begins previews on Broadway of Hamlet, and he's also co-starring in a made-for-TV movie called Taking Back My Life, which also stars Patricia Wedig. It's based on the story of Nancy Ziegenmeier, her rape, and the aftermath of the rape and how the legal system handled it. So we're going to take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Actor Stephen Lang is my guest. I'd like to talk a little bit about your life. Tell me how you started getting interested in acting. You grew up in New York. I don't know if you went to Broadway a lot.
I grew up in Queens, and I think probably via television originally. I liked all kinds of adventure shows, The Adventures of Robin Hood, and anything to do with pirates. And I remember very well walking along 73rd Street, on the east side with my grandfather and telling him about pirates. And he said, "Yeah, well, there's pirates over there." And he pointed across the street and it was a marquee of a theater and I didn't know what he was talking about. And it was, in fact, the Jan Hus Playhouse and they were doing the Pirates of Penzance there. And the next day, he took me to see it, which was great. And I think that's the first theater that I remember seeing, and I really was a sucker for it. And then over the next couple of years, I became kind of one of these child aficionados of Gilbert and Sullivan. You know, it's a certain, you know,
sounds hard to take, doesn't it?
Yes, they really are. They're nauseating little creatures, and I was one of them. And, you know, wrote letters to Bridget Doily Cart and sort of, you know. But I'll tell you what it did was it kind of got me backstage at City Center when Sol Hurek would bring them into town and, you know, would get their autograph. And I think going backstage is what probably hooked me, because backstage is very, It's a very special place. There's no place like it on Earth, and there really is no place on that I know that I feel more comfortable than backstage at a theater. So that's how it got started, and after that, I was always just going to be an actor. That's what I was going to do. When I grew up, I was going to be an actor. And I'd try out for school plays and not get in them, but it didn't bother me because I was going to be an actor. And eventually, I just did, I guess.
Do you mind if I ask you a couple of things about your father?
No.
Because I think some of our listeners might know about him. His name, Eugene Lang, and he became, I think, a multimillionaire and became something of a philanthropist to students at inner-city schools. And I know, I forget what year it was, but he told a class of students in a Harlem high school, mm-hmm. I think it was.
No, a Harlem elementary school, PS 121. The school that he went to when he was a little boy, they asked him to make a commencement address up there, which he went up to do. And as he was looking at these sixth graders, he realized that he was going to tell them that, you know, hard work, they could get, they too could succeed and everything. And he realized that the gap between him and them was just extraordinarily deep. And in an effort to bridge it, he said, if you guys can, you know, if you'll make it through high school, I'll put you all through college. And that got their attention. And then the task then became to make that promise have some meaning by equipping them with the tools to actually stay in through high school. And so the I Have a Dream Foundation was born out of that. And now it's become a nationwide program with, over 100 sponsors. And I think the program probably affects upwards of 100,000 children now, which, of course, has a geometric effect on the families as well, too. So it's just doing, I think, what he feels has to be done in order to educate the children in the country.
Did he do anything to try to teach you the value of a dollar that you wouldn't be spoiled?
Well, that was, yeah. I mean, he did everything about that. And what he didn't do, my grandfather did. His father did. His father, Dan Lang, was a really extraordinary guy. He was a foreman in the Brooklyn Navy Yard for many years. He was an anarchist and a card-carrying wobbly. And he... You know, when I went to visit, he had a little farm because that's what he really wanted to be, was a farmer. And I spent lots and lots of time with him. Summers I'd usually spend with him, and on the weekends I'd always go up. And he'd have me out there and my brother out there picking rocks and doing whatever had to be done. And he'd always look at me and say, if you don't work, then neither shall you eat. And, you know, it was hard and kind of painful at the time, but that's where I learned the value of a buck, was from these guys. And this is the same guy who took me to see Pirates of Penzance. So, you know, when it came to culture, when it came to something that had real positive value, they did it.
Now, you went to Quaker schools.
Yeah.
And I know one of the schools, I think the high school you went to was in Philadelphia?
No, it's in Bucks County.
In Bucks County,
Newtown,
right. It's outside of Philadelphia.
Yeah, yeah.
So, let's see, your mother was Irish Catholic, your father was Jewish. Mm-hmm. How did you end up in a Quaker school?
I think I was part of this educational experiment. My father sent, my sister went to Jamaica High, which is in Queens where my mother went, and a fine high school, and I was perfectly happy with the idea of going there. My brother went to New York Military Academy, and I was sent to a Quaker school. And I can only think the whole thing was some big experiment on my parents' part. And, you know, it all has worked out.
Did you ever go through a radical theater period, guerrilla theater, living theater, anything like that?
Well, I saw all those groups. I saw them in New York or Philadelphia, or they'd come to Swarthmore and do workshops, the living theater particularly, and the open theater, which was just a, you know, great theater bunch. And I did a bunch of psychodrama back in those days, but I didn't spend a whole lot of time. I think I was always more motivated towards a more legitimate kind of theater.
Why?
It's probably because of it's what I fell in love with in the beginning. I don't know. I don't know why. Generally speaking, I saw better theater that way. I would have rather have seen Hair than, the Serpent, I think. I think. I don't know. I haven't thought too much about this.
Did you ever go through...
I liked makeup and stuff like that.
Right.
I liked the whole process. I liked the difference between audience and performer, and I think that was one thing that was breaking down. I'll tell you what it was, is that back in the late 60s and early 70s, being very, 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 very involved in politics, and I didn't mix my theater and my politics all that much. When I did theater, I did theater, and when I did politics, I did that, or demonstrated, or the same as so much of, you know, the youth of America was doing then. But I liked my theater kind of undiluted with polemics and stuff.
So I want to wish you good luck next week.
Thank you.
As Hamlet. You have a rehearsal when you leave this interview?
I'm just going down there. Yeah, from here I'll go down to the rehearsal hall. I mean, to the theater, and put on my tights.
Oh, yeah, right.
No, I'm not wearing tights in this production.
No,
that was the one stipulation I made, actually, when I said I'd do this show. I said, no tights.
Well, why not?
Well, they're hard to get on, aren't they? And they're also, I just don't want to be running around in tights. That's not the Hamlet I wanted to do.
Why? Because you wanted to do something more contemporary?
Or? No, I just wanted it to be a little more rough-hewn. There's sort of a litheness and a sinuousness that I associate with tights somehow. And I wanted this one to be, what's the word? I don't know, a little, it's a vicious and a very sort of four-square production.
So what are you wearing?
Nothing at all, except a pair of pants. And it's Renaissance with a difference kind of clothing. They're, you know, I guess you'd call them breeches. And breeches and jerkins, lots of breeches and jerkins and that kind of stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Stephen Lang, thanks a lot. Real pleasure to talk to you.
Nice talking to you, too.
Stephen Lang opens in the Broadway production of Hamlet April 2nd. Previews begin next week. You can see him on CBS Sunday, March 15th in the movie Taking Back My Life. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.